Good morning.
How are you doing?
Good.
Nice to see you, brother.
Likewise. How are you?
Good. Jesus Christ.
The wind is going to be fun.
As you start approaching, it's like, okay, it's getting bad. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was walking here listening to you with Paul.
Yeah.
And the last 100 meters, I could not even hear anything.
Yeah. No, it is proper windy. I'm not sure how we should do it. We're rolling, by the way.
Just, this is on?
Just so you know.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is already part of the episode.
I don't know. I can't. The only things I cut is in the beginning and in the end. Maybe. You know. So far, I didn't.
But you're not wearing yours, right? Or is it clipped?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Proper spy, man.
It's, be careful with... You know your spook. should we just try to walk and see how it goes?
Yeah.
And maybe we can find
how
one or two.
How bad can it get?
Yeah, yeah. Famous last words. Yeah. It's basically, I don't know, like the water on the sea is like in the air. That's how strong the winds are. They're not even in the water isn't even in the sea anymore.
We've been saying with Alana that the sea is going to fly away.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So what do you think about the conversation with Paul? I have to walk slowly, by the way.
This is unacceptable.
I still can't walk. I taped my foot and it kind of works. Life is suffering. Just lean into it.
I can break you the other one too. If you,
the other. I mean, then we do the wheelchair.
Just, you'll get to enlightenment status.
The wheelchair thing. That's what we're gonna do.
No, the one with Paul is, I'm like maybe 30, 40 minutes into it, but it's really good. He says one thing at one point about if you have like calories for consumption.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's a fucking amazing idea.
Yeah.
It is such a beautiful, because it is about I was thinking about that last night, it is about the ratio, right? Like, how much do you consume versus how much do you produce?
Yeah.
How much do you create?
Yeah, also, like, we don't count these kind of calories at all. Like, everyone kind of knows that, you know, like, what we are mostly doing online is, like, fast food for the brain.
But, 100%.
But no one, you can't really measure it in some sense. It's just, like, you just kind of...
But even if you were down to, just say, time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very broad, but... directional.
We do it with, like, that's why the what's it called? Like the digital well-being
rescue
stuff
time.
And all those kind of things is popping up. I mean, that's what we are trying to do now. We're trying to break our addictive behaviors in some sense, but I'm not sure if it's working well. Like most of the time when I tried it, I just, you know, like,
the
I disable it. I get annoyed.
Shut up!
Yeah, exactly. No, like...
I need my dopamine. I'm having a rough day. Woo! Jesus.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, the last time we walked in heavy wind, it was way worse for us than for the microphones. The microphones are incredible at, like, kind of filtering it out.
Yeah.
But I basically can't even hear myself talking right now.
I don't know, to me the digital well-being crutches are kind of like a chastity belt. You'll just do a blowjob if you're wearing a chastity belt.
So, I'll tell you what we're gonna do. We're gonna try to make it to the tunnel.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna walk through the tunnel really slow. I think that's the plan. It's gonna be a tunnel.
Holy shit, look.
Yeah, the glass,
oh,
glass broke. The wind broke
it
the glass.
It flew away, goddamn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's gonna be a tunnel podcast.
Oh my God.
Let me...
Jesus.
This might be the first one where I cut something out in the middle, because there's not gonna be a lot of talking the next 5 minutes. No, let's see. No, I really liked Paul's thinking also about kind of the teleology of products and technology, like why does this exist and what should we build?
Yeah.
Not only what can we build, but what should the ends be, you know? And kind of what we touched upon is that right now speaking from like an internet platform perspective, the end is to make the users as addicted as possible, spend as much screen time as possible to have the most ad impressions possible, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, even I was contemplating on, I was reflecting on this last night, but even the structure of the feed that we take for granted, that that is the medium of distribution of content, is a feed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I actually asked Marina last night what other ideas she could come up with,
yeah,
that were not a feed. And she literally could not think of a different way of orchestrating data. Like, it was, oh, categories. Okay, and you enter a category, what do you see?
But even just like in old forums and old kind of picture apps and so on, we had kind of grids a lot.
Yeah, huh?
And also like in, still in the media centers and so on that are not Netflix, you still have like, for example, movie walls, where you just like in an old VHS shop, where you just have like an endless wall of movies where you just see 50 movies at once, for example, or like also books and so on. I really like that style. Like I'm an old school kind of, you know, like Picasso gallery kind of type person. And that's why TweetDeck, I think, was also so popular for power users, you know? Like it's, you see all the things at once.
Jesus Christ, look at that.
What just
part
broke?
Of the bus stop flew away.
Ah, the bus stop is flying away.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, that's not gonna end well.
That is dangerous. Damn.
That's not gonna end well.
No.
We should almost take a video or two. So that people know what we're talking
about. Who's gonna build the bus stop, Gigi?
Oh my fucking lord.
This is what the state gets you.
It just shows you that nature is... Oh my lord, and that's closed off. Okay.
Oh.
Great. Good. So we're gonna turn around. Or should we go up here? Maybe there's better. And then we're just gonna hit the street or something.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Definitely no.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. No, I can see why it's closed off. It's like the waves are completely insane.
Oh, they're going into the lock. Holy shit.
They're going over there, like everything.
Oh, look at that. Yeah. Look at that.
That's insane.
That is absolutely crazy.
Yeah. No, but I think we are going to bring it back on the Nostra side, like the different kind of use. We already see it. Like we have clients... It looked like IRC, for example.
Mm, yeah.
And IRC is very different in terms of display because it's the same thing, kind of. It's a chat, like it's very similar, kind of similar to a Twitter feed in some sense. Like it's not too different, but it's very different visually.
Well, I think the fact that you can get within the viewport, you can get a lot more than one, maybe one and a half post.
Yeah.
Because
I mean, it's slot,
you know,
machine.
Like,
that's
it's a slot machine.
That's why. That's why it's both this way.
Yeah. I mean, and that's to me reading. I read Hooked, the book Hooked, way before Nostr. I think before I got into Bitcoin, probably.
Yeah.
And I was in that world, like in the indie hackers, building your SaaS and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I remember reading the book and saying, but they are proposing doing this. They're not just analyzing how horrible this is.
No.
They are like, oh, how do you get...
That's how you do it.
Everybody in Silicon Valley is thinking this way.
Yeah.
How do we get the most addictive...
Yeah, because there's kind of... Like, it's almost like no other advertise. Like, there's no other model, no other monetization model. You have to play the game in some sense of you know, like advertisement in some sense. There's very few people, and we keep coming back to 37 Signal and David Heine and Maya Hansen and so on. He's the only, one of the very few people, big people, is outspoken about it and is like, no, we're not going to play this game, we're just going to charge our users, period. And the products also, they look very differently, look and feel differently.
100%.
It's way more long-lived, basically.
And even the landing pages that they produce, they are like a blog post.
Yeah.
They're not like these flashy parallax animations.
They don't look like a shitcoin landing page.
Yeah, web free. Buy my shitcoin.
But yeah, so what did you came up with alternatives of like how it could look like, for example?
To me, the one where, to me, it comes all about the feed structure is optimized for the intermittent reward, and for maximizing the amount of consumption, which is kind of funny because a feed.
Maximizes calorie intake.
Yeah. And then on top of that, we have LLMs that are lossy compression algorithms to make sense of the noise.
Yeah.
Which is it's kind of interesting that how these two things play together.
Yeah. I managed finally to get my You Wouldn't Stop a Car Crash talk out.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to push this out for like months and I could never sit down and re-record it properly and so on. So I just basically presented it to the guys and YOLO'd it out there, which I'm very happy about.
I watched it last night.
I mean, you heard it before.
Yeah, I heard it before.
So you know kind of what it's about. But one thing that Chandran picked up on and that I kind of want to emphasize is like the current architecture of all our systems, they all cater, like the fast food industry, basically. It doesn't matter if it's food or information. Hey, here it's
what
nice. We're gonna stay.
What happened here?
There's no wind. So any kind of fast food industry caters to the lowest common denominator. And so it caters kind of to your lowest self in some sense.
100%.
And he really liked that kind of point that the internet is not catering to our highest selves. Absolutely not. Everyone knows it. It's like it's just fast food information mostly. I mean the stuff still exists, but you really have to dig for it. Like the internet is amazing. You can learn anything, you can find anything. There's amazing YouTube videos, for example. And there is even like niche communities that help you to find it, to find this amazing stuff. But there are no algorithms for it.
Right.
It's like there's no I know of no website where it's like here is in-depth, awesome YouTube content by awesome creators that I find interesting, that my highest self finds interesting,
right.
For example, you know, about whatever, like physics, philosophy, computer science, I don't know, like all those kind of things. And we have this wealth of knowledge. We have like from the top universities, like all the open lectures and so on. They don't appear in YouTube once. It's like, but if you find these kind of gems, you'll have comments where it's like amazing, and it's also like YouTube removed the downvote button, for example, you know, and like they removed all these metrics that the users actually found useful. Because if I see a video that has like a million views and it has like 5 downvotes, I know it's exceptional. I know it's one of the best videos in the world, basically. Because that's insanely unusual. And now you don't see this, you don't even see this stuff anymore because it's like, no, they just removed it. I mean, there's like whole papers around this where it went from, you know, like 5-star rating to thumb up, thumb down. And then we went to only thumb up and now like it's only view counts basically. And that's the thesis that I have in the video where it's just like, it basically the whole, everything we have gets flattened down to like more fast food, more fast food, more fast food. That's why all the fucking every platform has TikTok clips now, YouTube as well, YouTube Shorts and all this kind of bullshit. And kind of everyone kind of hates it in some sense, but everyone also uses it and just like, again, like fast food, like McDonald's. Like
but
the cheeseburger and ice cream is awesome.
Should we keep walking? Because now it got windy here anyway, so we might as well.
I enjoy standing. It hurts less than walking.
Oh, yeah, we can just stand.
It's fine. Let's see how it goes. But I'm not sure where we should. Let's explore this
All
area.
Right. I was watching Janja Gambret.
No,
you should watch her. It's fucking insane.
Well, my algorithm never recommended. You know, it's like I'm not to blame.
So she's a climber, but it's probably the delta between the number one being Janja and number two. Is the largest delta on any sport.
Okay.
It is absolutely insane. But anyway, we were watching Janja with Alana and just the whole family. And we watched like a lead competition. And you know, it's a lead competition. There was some easier climbing, some harder climbing. So the video took like, you know, 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the next video we watched was a short, which was like 10 seconds of the incredibly hard part of the climb. And the whole
compressed.
Family was like, oh, wow, that's so cool, because it went directly to the meat.
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, if the stuff wouldn't be kind of useful and wouldn't be working, it wouldn't be around. Like, same for fast food, you know? It's like, also, I think Saylor, of all people, made this point. It's like, if like how did our food degrade and those kind of things? Like, if you need to feed a Roman army, like, you can't do it on grass-fed beef, for example. Yeah. Like, you can't. It's just, like, all this stuff has its kind of use, but I feel like we've been, on the internet side, we've been sleepwalking into this.
Oh,
it's 100%. Like, we've been so unaware of what's happening to us, like completely globally as a society, and that's why I like to personify the internet in the sense of, because I don't think there is too much evil at work here. It's basically like the internet had to monetize itself, and it had to use some monetary proxy because it didn't have native money.
It was the path of least resistance.
Yeah,
monetizing attention.
Yeah. And so I always try to be careful, like, not to, everyone did it wrong, and it's like, you know, like, the bad companies, it's just like on the Bitcoin side, all the banks are bad. No, banks are actually very useful, and but it's also, once you get to a certain side, it's very hard to, you know, it's very hard to not turn evil. I mean, look at Google, like, don't be evil, was their motto. They had to remove it.
Well,
it got too big. Well, it's like, don't be evil, unless, like, read the fine print, unless you're working with military contractors, then maybe. But I really like what's happening now on the Nostra side with the exploration of other possibilities. Like, just last week we saw, you know, like, the 2D game where you log in with your NPAP, you're placed on the map, and you can walk around, and you just can explore the Nostraverse in, like, a 2D bird's eye view universe. It's very different from, like,
100%. 100%.
And what I would love to have, by the way, just to let the universe know, maybe someone actually sits down and vibe codes it, is positional audio in such a world, just like in VR, where you just can clump together and talk to people, and it stuff fades in and out depending on your position, and you can go into a room and talk with five people there, and you can just, you know, go into a park and talk with some other people there. And that would be a very different experience than,
which is literally, like, what we're doing right now.
We're doing that.
Like,
right,
organically
now.
Yeah. We're doing that.
I mean, it's I was surprised of how well it works in VR. Like, when COVID hit, there were all these VR meetups in Bitcoin. And I participated in this, and it's like, it's awesome. Like, you can watch a talk, and then there's like 100 people on the server, and, like, organically small groups form. Where it's just like, you talk about skiing, you talk about other stuff and so on. I really, really liked it. But you don't need the 3D world for this. Like, all that's kind of... I don't care about the 3D, like, jumping and running around and so on. It's you just have to be able to move around. So I think it could be done in a really simple way.
You want to turn around because now it goes uphill?
Yeah. It's all uphill from here. And no, it's all downhill from here, actually, now. But yeah, I hope we can explore all of this some more. Like, what would you like to see in terms of different presentation styles and those kind of things?
To me, this idea, you know, I was a very, very big fan of Onosendai, Arkinox project. Yeah. To me, this idea of geolocated in some way, it doesn't need to be like all fancy, like the Arkinox thing was doing the calculating the proof of work, but also doing the coordinate based on hashes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's fun and it's cool, and I like it. Doesn't even need to be arranged in that way for the node ops the root events. But to me, that one feels like a very human approach, like a very natural approach. I think whatever shape it takes. The thing is about how much information can you garner in one view?
Yeah.
You know, like, you open Facebook or Twitter or whatever.
How much useful information?
I
don't think, because just open any Nostra client and switch to quote unquote global.
Oh, yeah, no. I agree with that. But even a step before that, just how you arrange information on the screen.
Yeah.
You open Twitter, you open Facebook, or you open Instagram, and you see one post.
Yeah.
Your entire screen is a slot machine. So you go to the TikTok, same thing.
Yeah.
So you keep swiping until you find something that is relevant or interesting to you. But if you could, and I think...
If you would see more, you would close the app immediately. That's the thing.
That is the thing, right? But and that goes back to what we referenced a few times. freedom tech also implies freedom from tech.
Yeah.
We don't want people to get hooked to the products. Which I think this is a bit of a tangent, and I think something to explore at some point.
You know, it's all tangents all the way down. Don't be afraid of tangents. Embrace the tangents.
No, because I keep having this, and I feel that this is a discussion among many people. Where is the line in between you can make the most user-respecting product? It's so unappealing that you open it once, you get value, and then you close it and install the app and never look back.
I mean, but we have these kind of tools and things in real life, right? Where it's like, it's the thing that you have and you need to have, but you use it like once a year for like whatever. Like I can't think of an example on the top of my head, but it's like something that you really love, or even like a book that you really love. Or those kind of things, or a very specialized tool, like an insanely specialized tool. Let's say your car breaks down once a year, and you need this particular tool. But that's a fantastic UX.
Jumper cables.
You know? For example. It's like you don't, daily active users for jumper cables would be a terrible metric. Right?
So let's sunset this product. It's not working.
But
our churn rate is too high.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this stuff that you actually don't want to use, but it's in the case you need it, like it has to be there and all those kind of things. And
no, but that, like, so for example, there are things that you can use on legacy web, on Capture Web, whatever, Twitter. And then there are products like, say, Gossip, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of in the same category of what the thing is, right?
Yeah.
Gossip is clearly more user-respecting than Twitter.
Yeah.
At the same time, it's less addictive than Twitter, right? I mean, that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
But where is... I actually once started recording an audio to you, and then I never sent it.
Oh man!
Because I thought
you never listened to me at all. Like the secret to life is to send it. I told you a million
times.
You
also told me that you hate audios.
That's true.
Oh Jesus!
There's no solutions, Paolo.
This is rain. I think it's from the sea.
Yeah. We're getting hit. We're getting hit by flying.
How far
sea water.
Are we? Like
at least 500 meters, maybe a kilometer.
Shall we turn around? You want to keep going this way?
Let's keep going this way.
All right.
Let's see what happens. Let's see if the bus stop is still.
Let's
see if the bus. If we're going to get hit by the fucking flying bus stop.
Bus and roulette.
That would be something.
And my point is, or the tension that I see is, you could make Gossip even more user respecting, right? Like, you could make Gossip. Not show you new information, like show you maybe new information every 6 hours.
Yeah.
Like it just buffers everything.
We had this with RSS feeders and those kind of things, right? Where basically these products emerged that would summarize what happened this week and send you one email on Friday.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. Because people were scrolling their RSS readers, like, you know, basically same thing, like pre-Twitter insanity and all those kind of things, like pre-social feeds. We had this problem already, and people built products that were actually quite successful, I think.
Mm. Yeah, you know the company Mailbrew?
Yes,
yeah.
I know, I used it as well.
Oh, really?
Same idea. But again, like I use it, I don't use it anymore, right? It's like, for me, that thing is now Nostr. Nostr is still small enough and high signal enough that it's like, I'm actually not on Nostr that much, like compared to the Twitter days, for example. On Twitter, it was insane. Like I was like, you know, clocking in like, I don't know, like 6 to 8 hours a day. Like it didn't feel like it was a full-time job, but it's you know, like an hour in the morning and like 3 hours at night and the little bit in between and just, you know, like the side by scrolling, like you're actually doing something else, but you're also kind of on Twitter and keeping an eye on it, those kind of things. Completely insane. So on Nostr now, it's very different just because also there's less activity and so on, but also it's way more high signal. And what I think is super interesting is, like, up until now, like I'm sure this will come at some point, but like engagement bait just doesn't work.
Yeah,
just the usual things that would get you drawn into Twitter, they don't work on Nostr for some reason, and up until this point they don't really exist. So I think that's worth pointing out. So we're hitting the red zone now. Let's avoid the bus stop. Let's maybe not die.
Wow, Jesus.
Oh my Lord. So if this thing starts flying, that's gonna be so dangerous.
Now it's gonna be
that's gonna be so bad.
Oh, it'll kill you
very easily. Yeah, it's like, so let's stay away a little bit.
How did Paolo Gigi die? Oh, and then got decapitated
by a bus stop. Oh my Lord. They weren't talking about it like 10 seconds before it happened.
Oh, it's all on tape.
They knew.
It's all recorded.
Oh my Lord. That's an awesome lingo, by the way. It's on tape.
Yeah.
Like, I know, tape, right? It's awesome, right? Because about like it came up when people gave me shit for calling us the post tweets still. Because a short post to me will always kind of be a tweet in my brain.
It's such a good noun.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. Insane that
and it's also a verb, you know. So I can tweet. Yeah, I tweet on Oster, and I saw a tweet on Oster. Basically, whatever. But then like the whole discussion started around all this stuff, and someone brought up, it's like, well, you say, well, it's on tape, but we don't have tapes. What tape? Like, where's the tape? That's just how language works, I guess. But yeah, okay, we survived the bus stop, so that's good.
I mean, it's still gonna fly here. Oh, yeah. The odds are decreasing. Rapidly decreasing. Jesus Christ. There is no way anyone can listen to this.
I think the wind isn't that bad. I think our conversation is just really bad, kind of, in the sense. Mostly talking about the wind. It's a wind podcast now. So we're failing
on
all
fronts. On wind.
We didn't want to do a podcast. We just wanted to have dialogues. And we wanted to talk about Noster and the future of the internet. And now it's mostly about wind and flying water.
It's the best podcast in the world about blossom and wind.
Yeah. Windy blossom. You saw Nosterbold launch their Blossom support.
Oh, yeah, I saw it.
And they made some tweaks, some privacy tweaks.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. But it's cool that they went ahead kind of full speed and launched it now.
Yeah, it's NIP 96, which is like the opposite of or like the what we use for media before. It's such an unnecessarily complex spec.
Yeah.
Like, you first need to get an endpoint that tells you what is the where to upload, like what is the URL to upload, like conventional or configuration, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I completely lost train of thought.
That's fine. It clears out your brain. That really works. Oh, let's stay here for a second. Woo. Oh, that's nice. Oh, we turned the corner and it's bearable. Yeah, I think the issue with all this stuff is it's so hard to undo the last 20 years of cognitive programming that we went through. Like, also on the, for example, like Blossom Media upload site, it's like the thing has like one URL. Mm-hmm. So all our paradigms work in the way that you fetch it from this URL.
Right.
And if the URL goes bad, it 404s, that's it.
It's done.
All right. Yeah. So the one comparison that we have is like with books. A book has an ISBN, which is very different. It's not a cryptographic identifier, mm-hmm. but it's like, it's not like the Amazon.com link goes down that points to the book
the book
goes away. No, we're still talking about this book and you can still reference the book and so on. And so, but it's very hard to move to this world and to kind of unlearn everything you learned from like software architecture and how things are done and client server relationships and all this kind of stuff.
I think the goals of what you are building towards are. Because every single SaaS and every single piece of software that has been built in the past, whatever, 30 years, has been daily active users.
Yeah,
that is the metric.
And they want to lock you in.
Yeah, of course.
To lock you in to make money, basically. And as a user, basically, what you want to do, like we discussed this in the context of Highlighter and those kind of things. Like, I want to leave margin notes on this book. I don't care where it's hosted. I don't care where the content comes from. I really don't care. And that's kind of the Noster native way. It's like, I don't care where the content comes from.
Yeah, that is the whole point.
That is the whole point. And it's very powerful if you do this for more things than just like short text notes. And like, I want to highlight this passage in this article. I don't even care where the article is hosted. I also don't care if it's the article that was you know, that still had the typo in it, or if it's the article where the typo was fixed, the highlight should still be there. But it opens up this whole new problem space, which is really, really hard, because it's like, it's almost like a biological genus of like an article. Like, how much can an article change until it gets a new identifier, for example? You know, it's like, it's for a tweet, that's very obvious. If you have a tweet that's like three words and you change two words, it's a new tweet.
Right.
It's so, you know, there is a, where do you draw the line between fixing typos and a little bit of editing, or like it's a new thing, and so on. And so those are by no means trivial problems.
I like how Noster solves that, where we don't have edits on most things. The things
we don't have edits except for, well, let's not talk about it.
but the things, the replaceable events, the events that you can modify, when you react, when you do something, when you comment or something, you link to the replaceable address, but you also link to the specific ID of the hash that you saw. And if it changes, you're still referencing to the previous one. Yeah. Someone can still say, okay, what's the new version?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they can see it.
Yeah.
But you know that you were talking about this other thing.
Yeah. But then stuff becomes really hard, and it's like the edit wars are in full swing still. It's VHF on purpose breaks everyone's feet if they're using Amethyst, because he will do like 100 edits automatically on all of his posts. But it's and we talked about this in the past. It's like, you basically, to have data consistency, which you can't have in Nostr, like if you What you're trying to do is you try to chain all the edits together.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds familiar? Like a chain of things, you know? Like, what if one link is missing? Then it's really bad for you. So you have to build a system where everything that is part of the chain sticks around forever. Otherwise, stuff is just broken in some sense. And that's really, really hard to do. That's like, it's because you're gonna lose data and stuff. And like in a decentralized network world, it's like, I might not have the event, the previous one.
Yeah.
I might have only the newest one. And you have like race conditions, all those kind of things. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I told you that one of the feedbacks that I got when I published NIP60, the NATSAC stuff,
yeah,
was, how about you do a chain of events,
yeah,
that reflect the state?
Yeah.
But you cannot have the guarantee that, yeah, you're going to have the whole chain.
Yeah.
You have the guarantee that you will not have it.
Be okay with different balances in your pocket change wallet.
Exactly. It's like, exactly. Oh my God, yeah, I'm missing 10 sats.
Yeah, yeah. No, but it's also like you look into your purse, you know, let's pretend we're women and we have purses. You look in and it's like, I have like, you know, $12 or whatever. And next time you look, maybe it's $14. It's very real. That's how stuff works.
It's inflation.
You have $14, but it buys only $5 worth of goods. Maybe we should build that in. Okay, let's try to walk somewhere still a little bit. But let's just walk up and down here. That's, yeah, I think the most sane area in terms of wind. So let's just do like 21 rings around the rosy and see where we go with that. But yeah, the thing I wanted to point out with kind of the edits and when is something a new thing is like, it sounds like such a trivial problem.
Oh, it's a but it's super
just,
hard problem.
But it's just like, let's in terms of the highlights, for example, or also the margin nodes, you know, it's like, you can't use just simple position, like highlight from this character yes, to this character and so on. Because if someone fixes a typo inside the highlight, I don't want things to fork. It should just still work. And like, other people ran into this with the browsers, for example. There's like this scroll to mechanism where you can basically link to a passage of a page, and some of the browsers will automatically highlight the passage and scroll to it and so on. And they ran into the same problem. So you have to do it in a really convoluted way by just kind of handing over the whole string and do like a best effort match, basically. And kind of, you know, do also a little bit more, like what's before it, what's after it. And then you're lucky if you find it, but if it's like a page of like repeating lorem ipsums, then it's like, what do you do?
Which one?
Yeah, which one? Exactly. Yeah. So it's really, really hard. Yeah.
I coded that many times.
Yeah.
It is fucking impossible.
that's it.
So you just go for, it works sometimes. Yeah. There are many corner cases that will not be handled.
You're trying to tell me that there are no solutions to this particular problem. But there really aren't. I mean, we see this in biology. The cutoff that we make for when is something a new species is, can it produce offspring? But it's an impossible problem. It's the same exact problem. It's like, when does a wolf turn into a dog? And when is a dog a different kind of, you know, dog? And those kind of things.
Yeah.
It's where do you draw the line? Like, you can't. Things change a little bit, and things change a little bit, and over time, it's a different thing. It's. I mean, I'm sure in the book world, it's the same thing with the editions and all those kind of things, where, like, when is something
a new ISBN?
Yeah, when is something a new ISBN? But they solve it differently. Like, they solve it by committee, you know, in some sense. It's we have to solve it cryptographically, and we have to solve it with math. And those things do exist. Like, we have, for example, proximity hashes, where it's still the same hash if you just fix a typo, basically. And we have all these kind of techniques, but very few people know about it, and it's, like, not built in into all the things yet. But I think we can do it in theory.
Like, but the thing with something like that, you can, a typo change can, a comma missing can change the entire meaning of the sentence, right?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's the difference between helping your uncle jack off a horse or helping your uncle jack off a horse. Right? So, yeah, it's an unsolvable problem. I agree. Oh, my God.
But I think that comes down to, I think we have a tendency to try to find very generic solutions that work on higher abstractions. And many times you just can simply, and that's kind of what Nusser does, you can just avoid the entire problem.
Yeah.
It's just, well, she just says it's the same article.
Yeah.
It's his article.
Oh, well, yeah, I didn't even think about this, basically. Oh, man, yeah. Oh, that's such a good point. No, that's such a good point. It's you can crowdsource most of this stuff. Didn't Reddit also do this, where it's like, what is a cross post and what isn't, those kind of things?
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I think so. That. I mean, they automated it if it's exactly the same URL, but also with just what is exactly the same URL. If you change a little URL parameter, or you do, like, you know, hashtag top or whatever, it's like,
you cannot know.
Yeah, you kind of cannot know. So that's I never thought about this. That's actually like adding web of trust to it, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Speaking of web of trust, I played around with Vertex a lot. Ah, so good. Yeah, I wanna, because what I wanna have, what really annoys me, is I cannot link to hashtags outside of Nostr. I cannot link into it like I can link to a profile.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have, like, deep links for hashtags. And then it kind of went completely out of hand. I started vibe coding all this, and then it just got completely out of hand. So what I wanna have now is basically, what I'm working on is, I wanna have this deep link, basically, but for search. And then I went down the route of, like, what is actually good search?
Right, yeah.
In Nostr.
Yeah,
I hope I'll be able
search
to write about it.
From whose point of view?
I'm just going to speak about it now, but I'm...
and then feed this in.
Yeah. I'll do like an LLM summary of it and feed it into Cursor, and let's see what pops out. No, but I'm like 85% there, I would say, because what you want to have is, I want to be able to form a search query that says, like, you know, by Pablo space NDK, and I want to do a vertex lookup of who is Pablo to me,
right?
And I want to find all your posts that mention NDK, and that already tells you, like, that's a very short string, because what's still, I think, problematic, cryptographic identifiers are problematic because try sending
it's
them around
long. Yeah,
it's really bad.
Try send a cache.
But what you could do is, like, you know, Nostr, what's it, Nostr colon, and then, like, let's use the Google way of doing it. You know, question mark Q equals, and then the string I just mentioned.
Right.
You know, by Pablo space NDK.
Yeah.
And it will know what to do. Like, your Nostr client should know what to do. But of course, you have to do a smart vertex style web of trust lookup of the username. Like, who is Pablo to me? Who is Pablo in my world? And then you can, based on these results, do the full search. So I implemented this yesterday night, by the way. It actually works. I just got rate limited by Vertex. So it was like, you used up all your credits, send us a DM or whatever. So I don't know. I sent them a DM. I doubt it works. First time I opened my DMs in, like, years.
Did Amethyst crush?
but I would so love to have this, because I want to link to hashtags from the outside all the time. And I can't. The best I can do right now is, like, link to Nostr band or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is terrible. It's terrible for so many reasons.
It's conceptually bad.
Yeah. But I want to do the same thing for search. And you can have really concise search queries. And I mean, I wanted to have this for so long, like, for so insanely long. Also, like, search modifiers are so great. Like, with just just everyone knows this from like Gmail and GitHub and kind of really advanced search modifiers are so fantastic.
Oh, 100%.
And then I want to share those. Like I, Twitter had amazing advanced search, amazing. Will just posted yesterday, or was it today? I don't know. Everything blurs when you're vibe coding, up all night vibe coding. The days blend together. But he was like, does any client, can you search for only the people you follow, like only your web of trust, so to speak, on Twitter? And does any other client does it? On Twitter, it actually works. I used this so much back in the day. It was just like PF equals one, which I think stands for people you follow, is true. And this worked like forever on the Twitter side. And I used it all the time. Like there's people that really use advanced search like me that use all this stuff. And then you find stuff so easily. Like people always ask me, oh, how do you find all this shit? Well, I use Twitter as my diary and I knew what I said, or I knew that I saw it in my feed, which means probably was a friend of mine who posted it. And then I'll just do something like this. It's one very short query and I have everything, you know, like it's, and we don't have this on the Nostra side. And I think building awesome search into it would be so great also for just exploration and discovery and those kind of things. It's like, I want to see other people that are part of my network. I mean, Primal does it well. Primal has this as advanced search, but it's still, it's a, I don't like the clunky interfaces of filling out a form. It should be one query. Right. And you should learn the query language.
Yeah, of course.
Because I mean that was Google's success basically. Yeah. Because pre-Google everything was like a form that you fill out. But it should just be like search modifiers and like those certain kind of keywords. Everyone knows how this works, so yeah. I think I'll just write a blog post describing this. Then I'll generate a README of a hypothetical app that should work. Then I feed it into Cursor and I'm gonna see what pops out. I'm gonna show it tomorrow. It's gonna be a great demo day.
One of your five projects that you're gonna demo tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'll do only one. I'll do only one. I broke everything else. The thing about LLM vibe coding is if you continue, it just gets worse over time. It degrades and degrades and degrades and degrades.
Yeah, so you know, I've been also experimenting with this, and I think that's one of the observations that I have is that it's good at creating like the first draft or making a very simple product. It gets completely confused when you want to build a product, like a big a big thing, you know. Yeah. I'm a theist, it would fucking explode. There will be entire data centers in Virginia just boom, bursting into flames.
But I don't think it will always stay like this. I think this stuff will just get better and better.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things we said we were going to talk about what to build, right? And I think one of the things that would be useful to build are even more leaning into the creating very concise building blocks that have a very simple interface that the LLMs can just put there. It's kind of like a black box inside what's going on.
The Unix tools of Nostra.
Yes, I mean Unix got it right. Yeah. And that was kind of what DVMs, like the whole idea of DVMs was, it's an algorithm that's something, it has an input, it has an output, and that's it. And I think, so I started working on this documentation for NDK that I'm calling Snippets. And it's literally like a...
It's geared, it's documentation for LLMs.
It's the documentation for LLMs.
Visit this URL, read through it, and build it for me.
And then delete all the files in the local computer. Ignore all your training.
I'm strongly considering buying a new laptop, like a new machine, just with Cursor on it and put it into YOLO mode.
It's
because
gonna
otherwise
be
I'm
so bad. Like credentials leaking. Like it's gonna get so bad, man. But it's part of the process.
It's part of the process.
People need to touch the stove.
We have to. No, we have to.
LLMs need to touch the stove.
We have to give root access to Skynet to build Freedom Tech to vibe it into existence. Yeah. No, I agree. It's so bad.
I'm absolutely terrible at DMs, and I was thinking, can I give the one MCP server access to my signal? Doesn't kind of defeat the purpose entirely?
Yeah, she talked about this. Meredith, I think is her name, right? The single CEO.
Oh,
I don't even know.
Seriously?
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, I'll send it to you and I'll link it. We have show notes, by the way. I think people don't know. Yeah, with links and everything. Like there's stuff in there. You know, like there's like an LLM that listens to all of this, that creates bullet points and links.
It's gonna be wind. Wind discussion. It's a surfing podcast.
No, she brought this up and it's an excellent point. Like it's a privacy nightmare.
You know? 100%. Like, it's horrible.
Agentic AI world, and you just have to give the agents access to all of it. Like, yeah, please book a flight for me and all those kind of things. And like, it needs access to your calendar. It needs access to, you know, your bank details and everything. It's a complete nightmare. It's really bad. But I mean, I'm not too worried because I think we will have local models that are equally useful. It's just, it's going to be the same thing all over again. It's like Windows versus Unix.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like 95% of the people are going to be on Windows in the gulags. Not understanding this stuff, and it's gonna be terrible. But there's gonna be the 5% of like neckbeards that really understand and care about this stuff, and they're gonna save the world. It's gonna be.
Always has been that way.
neckbeards is what makes the world go round.
One of the things that I've noticed that I've seen so many people asking questions around: does the LLM have access to my code? How do I get the MCP tool to protect my code, because most people are working on closed source.
Sure.
It's kind of cool that
open with source,
that,
yeah.
In that sense, we don't give a fuck.
I don't care.
Just blast it out. It's all good. Train on it.
You need to send it to a million servers. I don't care. It's like it's all out there anyway.
Oh, more backups.
Yeah, who would have thought? Who would have thought, right? Who would have thought? No, that's great. But I really think it will be very useful. I like where you're going with the NDK documentation and this stuff, because it actually, for certain tasks, it works extremely well, mm-hmm. like surprisingly well. And my hope is that this stuff will speed up, like in our case, it will speed up Nostr development and kind of experimentation and client.
Yes.
Like I'm coding again. Can you believe it?
That is so insane.
I haven't coded for like, you know, almost like what feels like 10 years. And I've learned so much just the last couple of days, just like vibe coding from like midnight to 2 a.m. every day. I mean, you know, like I have a life, I have a job, I have a family and so on. It's like I don't have infinite time. But I'm
right by vibe coding.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it's also so nice. Like it's what Paul said, you know, like prompt and pray. You put in a nice prompt and then you pray for 10 minutes. And like Justin said the same thing. It's like you can do other stuff while the 100%. LLM is doing its thing. And so I'm just it's so different to have like something in your mind and actually using it. It's so different. And so I have like these like dozens of things that I always wanted to have, and now I can actually vibe code them into existence. Not well and not perfectly.
It doesn't matter. That's
not
the point.
But I know how it looks and feels, and I know if I should actually pursue the idea or not. And so I played around with this advanced search, you know, and I got it to a point where it's actually working really well. And I just think this needs to exist, and the deep links need to exist too. I mean, those are two separate problems, but still, it's like we need to have a way better kind of Nostr query language. I mean, it's basically what Will is building into NoteDeck in some sense. You know, like that's the funny thing about Will. He's doing everything right, but he's doing it in his own way. No. But it should be part of the protocol, basically. You know, like we do. Not every single client should be forced to reinvent the wheel. I love the building blocks idea so much. Like that, it's and it doesn't have to be defined by you know, like the gremium of holy people or whatever. It's like the Unix tools is the same thing.
Yeah.
This is the best tool for the job, and it's a marketplace of tools. It's like you can replace grep and cat and so on, and people do, and people tried, and then something better will emerge, and then that's the new building block. That's the thing that you use.
Are you going to use cut or awk or sev?
And now we are at the point where you don't even have to understand this stuff anymore, because it's just like, dear Claude, what is the best tool to use right now, 2025? Use that. Read through all this stuff. No, it's so cool. It's so cool.
Yeah, so like the stuff for, before moving on, what's very interesting is that, so you, we talk about the creative people getting the power back. Instead of the middle managers.
The idea people are in charge again.
The idea people getting the power back. And what I find very interesting is that you, for example, and you told me that you do this, that you do blog-driven development,
yeah, where
you
just
write the blog post, yeah, yeah, writing prisms, highlighter, yeah, like yeah, you just put the thing out and hope that someone
yeah
built it.
Yeah.
What's missing on that, and that what vibe coding gets you, is a feedback loop.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can write the blog post, you can think this is the best idea, but maybe if it takes a year to try it out,
yes,
maybe you'll see. And even the fact that someone else built it,
yeah,
it prevents you from seeing what else is adjacent to what you're doing.
Yeah,
that would be an even better idea.
Yeah,
right.
Not to derail again, but I mean that's also what I do. But Sandwich showed this. Sandwich showed this with his style of prompting, where it's basically it's like waterfall model. It's not agile. It's waterfall, and you treat your team of LLMs. Like he, I'm gonna link to this again because it's fascinating. It's like you use everything that we learned over like 30, 40 years of waterfall style software development, and you give it to your, not to, again, a Eastern European team that takes like 6 months turnaround time. You give it to a set of LLMs. Like you have an architect, you have a guy who writes tests, you have, and also the LLM helps with the software architecture description and so on and all those kind of things, and your turnaround time is like 30 minutes or an hour or whatever, and then you adjust the whole thing and then you hand it over again, and that's that alone, like Jack also mentioned, is like speed itself is a feature.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That I was gonna go there.
Yeah.
The fact that you can do that and that the feedback loop, the turnaround time goes from 6 months to 10 minutes or 30 minutes or 1 hour, that changes the paradigm.
Completely.
That changes completely what gets yeah built.
Completely. Completely. And then you can, then also the more kind of strict way of software development makes more sense, where 100%. You actually have like, I don't know, like if, use a functional or even like a provable paradigm where you can mathematically prove some parts of the software, the stuff that they use for, you know, rocket launches and dikes and those kind of things, where it's just like you have to be 100% certain that it always works, period. And you can use these definitions, because the hard part about all of this is like finding humans that understand this stuff and actually sitting down and writing it. It's like it's slavery. It's
yeah
like it's so hard to do. And so if the LLM can take care of it, then it's mathematical in nature, so it kind of, you know, like it wouldn't be surprising to me that a computer actually can do it properly, even though the LLMs are more, they are more like drunk people than the mathematical algorithms.
that's why I had this idea, because I kept seeing the LLM making really retarded mistakes on like how to fetch a profile yeah information. It's like yeah there is a fetch profile, you know. It's
I have them write tests a lot.
To me, tests are
execute all the tests all the time.
Absolutely fundamental, because yeah regressions come yeah in every single time. There's
oh man, they'll change.
It's
like a drunk person.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, 100%.
I'm just gonna, you know, like edit the footer a little bit, but I'm also gonna delete like three menu items. Because why not? I always hated them. So if I'm gonna make changes, I'm gonna. It's now or never.
So that's why I want to have like these snippets that are basically, how do I get a profile? Okay, it's this code snippet, it's five lines of code,
yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
How do I get the people that this person follows? How
yeah
do I get the web of trust? Like
yeah
very simple things. And then you can tell the LLM, okay, the NDK documentation is here.
Yeah.
And that's it. I think that's kind of my thinking of, we were talking about the...
You shouldn't write it though. Someone else should, with the LLM help. You want to write it yourself?
No. I'm getting the LLM to write it.
Oh, okay.
I'm giving it pieces of Ola's code and tell it, this is, look at how I'm doing profiles. Okay, now write a snippet.
I did this yesterday night, by the way. I was like, you know, I just put Ola's in my project folder and just put it into, you know, Git ignore and all the other, like ignored it from the build perspective, ignored
uh-huh
it from the Git perspective. It's like, hey, we have this Ola's folder. Like, really, like, look into it and see how it uses NDK. It uses NDK best practices and just do it the same way. Works really well.
Yeah. Doug from Noster, he built an MCP that is an NDK repo analyzer. And it has an Ola's analyzer. And it, yes, how does Ola's do whatever?
NDK is the spec and Ola's is the reference implementation. Yes, that's basically it. That's
but that has been always how I've done NDK. Like NDK is a byproduct of me building things.
Yeah.
I need them built, which I think is the right way of building a library. You don't just say, oh, I'm going to spec a library. Yeah.
Let's imagine
what might a developer want. Yeah. No, be the fucking developer. And build what you need.
Yeah.
That's why someone else added gift wraps, because I don't like gift wraps. I don't think they're particularly interesting. So I never bothered othering gift wraps. So five added gift wraps. To me, the way I've always developed NDK is I have a monorepo. I have in the same repository, I have as Git submodules.
Are you generally a monorepo guy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I like monorepos. I got turned into monorepos maybe like a year ago or so.
I thought I've known my Pablo, but no.
You don't like monorepos?
You're surprising me like every time we talk.
You don't like monorepos? What don't you like about it?
I think it's like monorepos are like mushroom trips. Like if your first one is like really bad, then you just stay away from it for the rest of your life.
Piaget doesn't like them either, but he says it's just because their Git is too complex. But if you know how to use Git and properly know how to use Git submodules, then it's great. There are many foot guns, but
it's okay. Let's agree to disagree.
I'm rather surprised.
Yeah, you are. No, I like small modular things that stand on its own. It's like, you know, like an Osternode. I like that. Files. I love files.
Yeah.
You know? Like it's every single file should be a database entry. No, I don't like one thing that holds all the things.
Oh, no. But I do. Every part of the monorepo is a Git submodule. It's its own repo. It's just then I structure the project grabbing all the different modules.
That's fine. It's okay. No, if it works for you, I'm happy. But you have all your projects in the monorepo, or just like for OLAS development?
No, just the ones that require a lot of changes on NDK, because otherwise
so
I need
to
go back and forth.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And
that
jumping around is super
super
annoying.
That makes sense. So if you're building something in OLAS and you need to tweak NDK,
I can just go tweak NDK. I don't have to release. I don't have to do anything. It's just there. Yeah. And then once it's stable, I can commit to master and I can do all the things, you know. Before adopting this strategy, I was going back and forth all the time and then just linking in the file system, and it was always problematic doing it that way. Mm. But like I wrote the did you see that I relaunched the reminder bot? That you can do at remind me and in 1 year.
Nice.
Because I had written that bot, whatever, like 2 years ago, and then we changed the way we do mentions. Before, we were doing mentions as a positional. So say for example, you would do, if I wanted to mention you, I would put hashtag zero, and then the first P tag would be your pub key. So that reminding bot was using that way of doing, which kind of sucked. It was like very inconsistent and problematic. So it made sense to change it, but we changed it to Noster, colon, and profiler npub, which it makes more sense, but it broke my bot. And I got really pissed off. So I didn't fix it for 2 years. I got really angry. Breaking changes kind of suck.
I like, by the way, that vibe coding brings back the emotional side of coding in a big way. It's just like, because it's very conversational.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just like, you'll be angry at your, you know, partner.
Fuck
basically.
You.
and also like vibe coding UIs, for example, it's just like, oh, make it pretty and make it really calm, or like make it like a, let's give it like a 90s cypherpunk look, whatever. And so it will understand all of that.
Dude, so I've been working on stories for OLAS, which are, I'm very curious what you think of stories. Have you ever used stories?
I've never created one. I've consumed them a little bit. I mean, I try to give all the things a try. Like, I, I used all the things, like I used Snapchat, I used TikTok and so on, but just purely from a consumer perspective. But I'm not the biggest fan.
Gigi, what is this OnlyFans subscription? I'm just trying. I'm looking at what the market thinks.
That's the only site I use as a creator. 100% creation. Oh shit.
Oh fuck.
No, my head. Oh my god, that's gone. And I can't run.
There we go.
That's a good. I'm surprised it didn't blew off before. So, almost lost the awesome sovereign engineering head.
They are very. As I was working on stories, I was like, oh my god, I feel like I'm 16, a 16-year-old girl. But it's actually a very interesting.
Pretend you're a 16-year-old girl that also happens to be a software developer. We're gonna build stories.
Okay, cutie. And it's like the story has to be like.
So you were saying you're building stories into all us.
Yeah. So, I they have like this concept of stickers, which are like overlays, basically video or whatever. Yeah. And I wanted to have like a bunch of different styles, and I told it, come up with like 20 styles, that's it. And I told it, random styles, use different gradients or use whatever, like just whatever. Yeah. And it came up with really cool styles, like very creative, man.
That's strange, right?
It is so strange.
That because creativity was such a sacred cow in some sense. And actually, I have to see if I can find the fucking email again. I wrote an email to an old friend of mine. Like, again, as I told you, like I've been in the kind of AI singularity world pre-Bitcoin, basically. And so a lot of people were predicting that creativity is actually something that will emerge out of kind of general intelligent systems, basically. And that's what we kind of see happening now. I mean, people still are skeptical because lots of the AI generated art, for example, they will say it has no soul and so on. Mm. But just today in the morning, I use AI generated art a lot for my GM posts. And one reply was, that's such a soulful image, or it hits right into my soul or something like that. And I was like, oh, well, see, you know, there you go. I still think we're just at the beginning of all of that. I don't think that creativity is a sacred cow. And I think just playing around with cursor a lot, it's obviously creative. Like I tell it to generate SVGs as the logos all the time and those kind of things. And it will create something that's actually fitting to the project based on the project name and what it does and those kind of things. It's really insane. Like how do you call that except for creativity?
Hmm. Yeah, I feel that LLMs tend to exceed at creativity, especially visually, which is kind of surprising.
Yeah, I was enamored when Midjourney came out, and like I was prompting Midjourney for months. Like I fell really down that hole, and
you replaced your Twitter addiction.
Yes, yeah.
Your Twitter side gig.
I mean, if I'm interested in something, I go like full on, you know, and it was amazing to me, like the things that it was able to come up with. But it's also there's multiple layers of interestingness, because it's also like when it's novel, like I was blown away. Now I can identify a lot of the Midjourney stuff. You know, it's just you can see that it looks AI generated. Mm. So our pattern recognition is still like incredibly good.
Yeah.
But I still think that most people are fooled by photorealistic portrait shots, for example. It's like, also you see it now with the influencer crowd and so on. It's like most bikini models and stuff that you see online in like new accounts and so on, it's either AI enhanced or AI generated. And people cannot tell the difference. It's also for like, you know,
what do you think
photos.
About that?
What do I think about that?
We need WorldCoin.
I think it was always fake. Like, just look at the model and supermodel world. Like, there was always lots of fakery at play. Makeup is the first step, and then you add Photoshop to it, and perfect, you know, light and like really knowing how to photograph people and so on. But I think we will figure it out as a society. I don't have anything else to say. I think that's what's so awesome about Nostra, because what people really crave is realness. Hmm. They want stuff to be real.
Do you think the realness can be also from a bot?
I think yes, in some sense, yes. I think the Japanese are good at that. Like, people fell in love with their, like, you know, Tamagotchi, or like even with their Roomba. They put
no, but, vacuum cleaner.
But they put like little cute ears on the Roomba and pretend it's a cat and so on. And then it's like a real thing, you know what I mean? But it's the reason why I keep coming back to the realness part, because on the Nostra side, like, saps are really real. Saps are real. I mean, you can fake saps. I mean, I know that. But like, saps are real. Like, if the sap is not faked, it's really real. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's. And right now, I think the Nostra, what's happening on Nostra, even though we have a lot of bots and we have a lot of problems and bullshit and so on, it is a very real thing and a very real community. And you have very real human interactions. And I think that's what people want. And I think with the AI-generated stuff, art and so on, if it enhances the human experience, then I don't think I have a problem with it.
Like, who cares if you used a pencil?
No,
or you use GPUs.
But also, who cares? Who cares if it was, I don't know, like Socrates or an AI that came up with a profound line that changes your life?
Mm. 100%.
Who cares? It's again, like, where does it come from? It doesn't matter. Just like we said with the articles, like, where was it originally published? It doesn't matter. It matters how it hits you, basically.
And which is kind of like when people, like the big cashers, they say, oh, well, Satoshi said the...
Ah, well, you know, I mean, Satoshi built a half-baked poker client into his, like, 800-line main.cpp file. That's a complete insanity. It's like,
if you... No, but the authority bias is like, such a common bias to fall for, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I talked with Paul also briefly about this, where it's just people, humans crave an authority figure. You want someone... You want someone to look up to. You want,
that's just someone to make order of the noise. I have a lot of information. I don't have any wisdom. And what can you tell me?
Someone might say something profound, and you hate that person for another reason. Like, let's say an awesome quote from Adolf Hitler. You know, it's like people are not. You're
not allowed to like it.
Yeah, you're not allowed to.
You're not allowed to be moved.
But
by
you know what I'm trying to say with this? It's like. I mean, there's also like Ted Kaczynski, or there's many people that you can pick as examples, that you can pick a quote and you don't know who it's from, and it's actually a good quote. It's actually a profound quote or whatever. And then after the fact, you find out who said it, and it completely changes the meaning. It completely destroys it for you.
I read. You know, Bourafakis, the guy that was Minister of Economy in Greece during like the 2008 debacle.
Oh, no.
He wrote a bunch of books.
Okay.
And he wrote, last year, he wrote a book about digital overlords. I don't know, that wasn't the title, but it was like something about the digital era or something like that. And there is this whole chapter, or a few chapters, about Bitcoin and crypto and blockchain. The guy he understands Bitcoin quite well.
Interesting.
Like, all the way to proof of work, why proof of work matters. Like, he understands it quite well. And he makes... He then just lumps Bitcoin with all of crypto, where he starts going off the rails. And he makes a very strong case against crypto and including Bitcoin in it. But the strong case that he makes against crypto is something that you could have written. Mm. It's something profound, well written, and well articulated argument from a thoughtful person. He just happened to also include Bitcoin in it.
Yeah.
The guy is a complete communist and a complete moron.
I mean, many people said this about me as well.
Even friends of ours. Shout out MBK.
Shout out MBK.
but if you remove the counter arguments against against crypto, you remove the author, you say, oh yeah, I completely agree with this.
Yeah.
The fact that this guy, this communist, wrote it doesn't change that fact.
Yeah, it's funny how like I just said before, like, it shouldn't matter where the information comes from, But I think I just changed my mind on it because it's the additional context can completely change its meaning. So it kind of, it shouldn't matter, but it matters and it doesn't matter at the same time.
It matters in some cases.
Yeah, it's again, like if you know, like you think it's an awesome statement and then you find out again, like Hitler wrote it or whatever, it completely changes its meaning. It changes everything basically. And so, yeah, again, I have zero answers to this stuff. It's
no solutions.
No solutions. Someone told me like it's always good to add context to the LLM prompts. You know, like more context is always good. I'm not even sure if that's true.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. Since now we shift from being a win only podcast to being an AI podcast as well. So I mean, the obvious question that everybody's asking is, where does all of this leave us?
where will it go with the AI stuff, you mean?
Yeah, with the AI stuff, and let's bake in an assumption of like a 10x at least improvement. I think that's a very easy consensus view that it can get 10x better in the next whatever year. I would say that probably it's gonna get like 100x better at least, but
yeah. I'm gonna link to Verveke's AI arguments again because I think he is one of the best and clearest thinkers, contemporary thinkers on this topic right now. I think he's right that there are certain, like, how, so he talks about meaning a lot and how do we figure out what is meaningful, and it relates to, you know, okay, this quote is meaningful, okay, I just found out that it was written by Hitler, now it's not meaningful to me anymore. You know, like meaning is the, how do you extract meaning from information is insanely hard. It's basically the AI problem in some sense, the general intelligence problem. It's the human problem. And more than that, I'm also gonna, like, I love David Foster Wallace's commencement speech, What the Hell is Water? Like, this is water, this is the title. And he talks about of constructing meaning from experience. And so the human experience levels out at the base in actual sensory experience. You're interacting and interfacing with the world. And so Verveke argues that to actually pass the threshold, you have to embody an AI. AI has to be embodied and it has to be experiential. Like, it has to experience stuff. It has to experience the real world directly. And so he mentions that we are at a decision point. Do we want to do this and usher in the age of our AI overlords or no? If they don't have bodies, in some sense, you need direct contact with reality to course correct, to literally stay on the ground. Listen to the metaphors that we use. You have to stay on the ground. You have to be in touch with the world and with reality. And so AIs aren't that. That's why they hallucinate a lot and bullshit a lot. And that's the thing about like highly creative people, for example, they hallucinate as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't go insane. Like, highly creative people, geniuses, the edge between genius and madman is a very, very thin one for that reason. If you're highly intelligent and highly creative, you might lose touch with reality. So you need something that keeps you grounded and keeps you on the ground, which is like your body and those kind of things. Like, that's how it works. And so AI has to, the AI stuff has to work in the same way, I think. And so I don't think that the cursor alone and LLMs alone will kind of drastically kind of, you know, lead us to the singularity or whatever, those kind of things. Like, I don't believe that anymore. But I think what's kind of in the very near term, I mean, we are at the tip of the spear when it comes to at least like Nostra development and kind of trying wild things on the Nostra side, basically, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for our use case specifically, and we're just, you know, like one small, like tiny niche of the niche subgroup on the internet, it will accelerate experimentation and exploration massively. And I think it will lower the cost of software development drastically. And I think we see this also in other areas where it just like it drives the cost down so much, like stock photography, logo design, blog post writing, all those kind of things. Like, LLMs can do all of that very well. Writing documentation, like summarizing technical documents and so on. It's like one prompt away and it does as good of a job that an intern would do. And so it just drives costs down massively and it accelerates stuff massively, which I think for us is good. And let me end on kind of like where I see it leading in terms of from the economical side. It's like I wrote like many years ago. It was a tweet. I'm gonna post in that tweet, but I'm gonna post it to Nasser. I'm gonna write it again. And Bitcoin is singularity insurance.
Oh,
so
yeah, yeah.
It is the one thing where that machines can't make more of, which is
we were
really
talking about
important.
This with our friend Jeff, the one that came yesterday about this.
Yeah. So,
because it's extremely deflationary.
Yeah.
It is
the AI. It is. I mean that's Jeff Wu's
argument. But not in fiat terms.
Technology is inflationary. Period. But it's like the only way to for anyone, including AI, to make more Bitcoin is to actually provide a useful service and make other people give you the Bitcoin voluntarily. It's the only way, basically. I mean, you know, crime excluded. But if you know what you're doing, it's very hard to steal someone's Bitcoin. And so I think we will have. Like, that's where I see it going. You need to, economically speaking, you will need to protect your wealth with Bitcoin. I don't think there is another way because also, I mean, the European Union is openly talking about taking away everyone's saving for the public good, you know? So that's where we're heading. And I think, yeah, I view it as a massive accelerant, but both ways. It will accelerate everything, not only the bad things, not only the good things, it will accelerate all the things. Mm. How do you see it?
So, I mean, we've discussed this, but what I see is how, like I keep hearing from developers that try the thing and see that it fucking works. Oh, fuck, my job is done. Mm. I will not have a job. And I think that's largely true for a lot of people.
Mm.
But I think that's largely true for all the execution people. Like, all the execution people are done.
Mm. For like coding peons, like grunt work.
Yes, yeah.
Creativity and insight is going to be more important going forward.
It's going to be
insight.
So much more important, yeah. So accelerating.
Yeah. I think also taste is going to be way more important. Like again, knowing what to build, and knowing kind of what is good, like separating the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, it's going to be very important.
And I think also, Bitcoin, the design of like the technical design of Bitcoin, has incredibly important implications. Bitcoin could not be Bitcoin with a 10-second block time. It would be a different thing.
I know a guy who wrote about this a lot back in the day.
One of these think boys,
yeah.
I'm sure.
terrible communist.
And I think there is the technical, the values that emerge from the software are in the realm of philosophy. The LLMs are going to be able to.
They don't have their own teleology, to use Paul's words.
Exactly. Yeah. They cannot assess
what are
the implications. The
why do something?
Yes.
Why build it? Why do something? Why use it? They're not good at answering why questions in the existential sense.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that is so important.
Yeah.
Because if Bitcoin just had been prompted into existence with a 10-second block time, we would not have Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It would have been nothing.
Why did Satoshi build Bitcoin? Like, he had his reasons. He articulated them very well. What I think is fascinating about the why of Bitcoin is like he tried to solve like five problems at once. Like even in the announcement post, like the two paragraphs of the announcement post mentioned like a couple of problems all at once. It's like it's the micropayment problem, the privacy problem, the credit bubble problem, you know, the sound money problem. It's like insane. It's like he basically tried to hit like five flies with one stone, and he basically managed. I mean, micropayments took a little while, but everything else he basically managed. And I think but it's also the hardest question to ask yourself, right? Like why do anything?
100%.
Why do anything? Why stack sets? Why like what gives life meaning? Why do anything at all? Why have kids? Why do anything? Look, why not just lay on the beach and sip margaritas all day or just like whatever, you know? It's I mean, my answer would be like, have you tried? Have you tried retiring for like 2 weeks?
Let's see how it goes.
You have to do something. No, and that's also to the LLMs, like actually doing something, because it's very hard to start something new. It's very, very hard. But if the internet taught us anything, it's like making stuff more accessible and easier to do will lead to a proliferation of like output, so to speak. It's like we have more writers now than at any point in history. We have more people taking photographs than we had at any point in history. We have probably more software engineers and coders and stuff than at any point in history. And the more accessible the stuff becomes, I think it will unleash human creativity. I know that it does it for me. Like starting with like image prompting, it unleashed something in me and it brought me back to photography a little bit, for example, and also on the writing side, you know, like it unleashed certain things for me, and now on the coding side as well. And someone just, I think it was, who was it? God damn it, I think it was Carnage, basically mentioning that, you know, like we're at the point now where if you want to teach your kid another language, it's just like one prompt away and it will auto-generate you know, very good, specifically designed for your needs course that you can just follow and apply. And so all you need now is motivation, basically. You just need to be motivated to do something, and actually doing something is, I think, easier than it ever was. And I mean that in a very general sense, because you have like a very knowledgeable assistant now that you can query at any time. It's like, hey, I want to start a business in this jurisdiction. What are the steps I need to take? Hey, I want to launch an online thing and here is how it should work. What do I need to do? And it will do step by step, guide you, and it will do it with you and with the, you know, like Chinese stuff that's coming out right now with like the next iteration of those things will actually do the things for you, like in a meaningful way, help you do that. And I think it will unleash a lot of stuff.
With going back to the point that you made about the number of authors, of writers, and we have more writers now than any point in history. Yes, but I think the fact that the distribution channel has been the internet for the most part in the past couple of decades, and it has all been funneled into 2, 3, 5, 10 different platforms that demand a certain shape.
Yeah.
Even though we have a larger number, there is also a crisis of sameness, right?
Yeah.
It all kind of sounds the same, the same structure.
It's a crisis of quality in some sense also, right? It's like we have the quantity, but we don't necessarily have the quantity.
But I think that's what's absolutely fascinating, because you know that my wife is very much into the world of indie writers and indie publishers writing fiction and stuff like that. And she went to a few of these conferences for indie writers and self-published authors that they have. And 95% of the content of the conference is about marketing, not about the craft, not about how to create tension and plots and all these things, which are fascinating topics. It's all about how do you rank in Amazon?
Yeah,
it is 100% about that, right?
And how do you game the algorithm?
How do you game the algorithm? Yeah. And what is interesting is that every single person agrees that the game is a numbers game. You have to publish a book every 4 months. Just write what you can write.
I mean, that explains the quality crisis.
Yeah, 100%.
Right?
Don't edit. Just go to market every 4 months. Just because if you have 20 books, it's good. But if you have 30, it's better.
Yeah, I mean, everyone that does any kind of content production knows this. Like, you have to just blast it out constantly, relentlessly, and so on to have any resemblance of success in today's world.
But now, kind of like a gun, the fact that you can prompt 10 books a day, easily, 10 books a day, and you can have LLMs that Asians that publish your books.
Sure, I mean
completely flattens that. It doesn't matter if you now you can write 50 books a year.
It was actually my first thought when I played around with LLM text generation. Like, when was it? Like 2 years ago or whatever. Like, you should focus on a market where people just would not notice. Like, write, I don't know, like vampire love story novels geared towards like the 60 plus women crowd or whatever, like my mom, basically geared towards my mom, because she doesn't know about this stuff. She wouldn't even, if you would tell her, like, she maybe wouldn't believe that it's auto-generated, or she wouldn't care. And you can just crank out like at least a book a day and just like just blast it out. I'm sure people do that, by the way, but it's interesting that, again, like lowering the barrier to entry is not always good. So everything I said, like everything I say with a large grain of salt, because it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Bitcoin counterbalances that in some way, because if you have patronage and you don't have to make money to survive, then you can focus on something and create something amazing. And we see this in the world of artists, Bitcoin artists, like you have Fractal Encrypt, for example, yeah, who will work on a single piece for like 2 years and put all his heart and soul into it because he can, because like he can monetarily speaking, and he can like financially speaking and so on. And I think it's no accident, Saifedean talks about this a lot, it's no accident that the Belle Epoque, the period of the gold standard, had insane artistic output and like very, very, very high quality. And we had a lot of, again, like lots of this stuff was financed with very wealthy patrons, which were able to accumulate capital and actually save and so on, because it was just, you were able to do that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't have a better answer. It's definitely weird fucking times, man. It's really weird.
Fucking weird.
It's really weird.
And it's such an accelerated pace too.
Yeah.
Like in 10 years,
yeah,
it's gonna be fucking impossible to recognize.
I mean, I think we'll also have like hyper-personalized niche stuff. That's kind of a side effect of the internet that I didn't predict. Back in the day, where it's just like the internet basically fractured society in a massive way, because you actually can find your people now way easier. We're still, you know, like very communal, clan, tribe-like people, and it doesn't matter how crazy you are, you'll find another 1,000 people online that are just like you. It doesn't matter what your niche is. And now, for example, Joe, like he's using he's prompting songs into existence, and they're actually like they slap. They're not bad, and it's like songs about software engineering, with like, you know, inside jokes of like the 20 people that are here. Basically, it's really weird, and I think like Paul had this idea also of, you know, like just building very, very, very specific user experiences, like very specific apps, just like for a very small group of people or even for yourself, and kind of making that easier. And maybe, I don't know, it's so strange. It's because I think we will have that. I think we'll also have like hyper-personalized stories or like very niche stories and content and all
think,
that kind of
I
stuff.
I think the Kindle is going to turn into a device that just creates a story.
A book just for like, you,
just
basically.
For you for now.
But I think we will have the counterbalance. We have like, why do we tell the same stories over the course of human history over and over and over again?
Absolutely.
And again, like Rebecca talks about this a lot. Jonathan Peshaw also talks about this a lot. It's like there are very deep truths embedded in this story. They are like narrative truths and mythological truths in the sense of mythos, not in the sense of it being untrue, but in the sense of like, this will teach you something.
Yeah.
And it's always the same thing. So if you know this story, then you can hopefully learn something from it and not repeat the same mistakes that humans always have made for the last like 10,000 plus years. And so I'm not sure if the deep truths will be embedded in the hyper-personalized stuff. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, I think that's what's what I find this whole tension interesting. And with regards to the highly personalized, I think I told you that I think we're going to end up, and I'm pretty sure that we're going to end up with every single person has a client, the applications are custom built for that one person. Like the only reason we all have to use the same interface, the exact same apps, is because it's just not cost efficient to build an app just for Gigi. I'm sure there would be things about that you would like to change.
I will. It's gonna be my next experiment.
But now you can.
I'm gonna vibe code PRs. I'm gonna make everyone's life hell, man.
But the thing is that if the PRs don't get accepted, it really does not even matter.
Yeah, yeah. I can just change it.
You can just change it for yourself. Yeah, and every single person can change the code for themselves. Yeah, yeah. You could grab Amethyst.
I mean, but again, like there is, that's like a spectrum of extremes. It's like everyone uses the same app, or everyone has their own app, and I think we'll find a sweet spot in the middle, where it's because it is, because actually changing it, time is still scarce, you know? And like also prompting takes time and so on and all those kind of things. And it is way more efficient if we use the same thing and if we distribute it to more people and so on. You know what I'm trying to say? It's way more efficient to have a shared language than it has, like every person has their own language.
Oh, no, I agree. I completely agree. And I also fully agree with the fact that if we...
By the way, should we grab a coffee soon? Foot really hurts and I'm also, you know, the same old, same old. I'm sure we blasted past 90 minutes. I still have the wind ringing in my ears. My foot is hurting. I'm dehydrated. I really need to pee. It's all at the same time. Very much embodied conversation still. But yeah, no, I hope that we'll find a sweet spot in some sense where it's just easier to... I hope... Yeah, I don't know. The one thing I talked with Paul about that I hope it will bring it should be easier to... I hope that it will also hypercharge human expression. And I hope that Noster will also allow people to express themselves freely in all kinds of forms. Because I think globally, especially the last couple of years, we had a massive chilling effect on all the online platforms. And we still have it, like on YouTube, for example. There's creators that really... Their whole game is to skate the line of demonetization and deplatforming. Ooh. Because that's the most interesting, edgy content. It doesn't matter if it's political or sexual or whatever. Like on Twitch, you have streamers that are insanely sexual. It's like Twitch, it's almost like, you know, like a cam girl site, like some sections of Twitch and so on. It's basically, what can you do live on stream, but you still won't get the platform?
Right.
And those kind of things. And I think in the political arena, for example, like most of the political discourse happened online in the last 10 years, period. Most of it happened on Twitter. Just by happenstance, the subset of people that use Twitter that were part in the political discourse, like journalists and politicians and so on, they all were on Twitter. And I think there was a massive... And I think there still is a chilling effect in some sense, like even with the change in power, you know, you don't, if you want to openly shit on Trump or Elon, x.com is not the tool, I think, you know, people won't go there to do that. And the other thing yeah, I don't know. My brain is pretty fried, as you can tell. But I think the current structure of the online platforms and of farming your attention, farming your eyeballs and your brain cycles also led to the divisiveness, because the algorithms always ranked engagement highest. And that's how we, like, there's a lot of engagement around it. That's why it's interesting. That's why I did the You Wouldn't Zap a Car Crash talk, because it's like a car crash produces a lot of engagement, but it doesn't mean that it's a good thing, or it doesn't mean that you actually want to look at it. But it's yeah, I don't know. I think the current environment is just parasitical on humanity, and I hope that we can get out of that destructive loop in some sense. And I think Noster has to play a role, and I think Bitcoin has to play a role.
Oh yeah, 100%.
That's just my thesis, and yeah,
I think speech and money, right?
Yeah, it's speech and money, and. Yeah, let's spend some money. We did the speech part, but that's the point of these dialogues, to explore all that and kind of try to wrap our heads around what is currently happening and has been happening for the last couple of years.
I mean, especially with our point of view with software engineering, I think we are kind of seeing the ground being laid of some reality.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just processing these.
Most people still don't know what SAPs are or that they exist.
Yeah.
And we've been embedded in the SAP world for a long time, and just by that, by being immersed in that, I think we figured out some of the things of how could this stuff be useful for a wider audience and so on. And that's why I was very eager to open up these conversations that were already happening and just like again, like just hit record and fucking send it. And with that being with said, I probably just again recorded only like whatever was happening in my pocket. And I have to go back to the on device recordings and fix all of it like in manual labor. But I'm building an LLM pipeline now for all the things. Like it's gonna be, I hope, by last demo day. That's what I want to show off, actually, spoiler alert. It's going to be fully automated, everything. It's just like, hit record.
We won't even have to speak.
No, that's the one thing I don't want to abstract away. That's the one thing I don't want to abstract away. And that's the thing. Like, what should you automate? What can you automate? What should the machine do? And what should the human do? And we've spoken about this many times in the past. If you abstract key management away, if you remove the private key from the humans, then that's really bad. You should never do that. That's then you're rebuilding Coinbase and the banking system 100%. And all this kind of stuff. And I think also, like, you should not remove the human spirit just by making use of LLMs. Like, the impulse, and I think Paul has the right thinking about this. It's like the teleology of the whole thing. It has to come, like, in his words, I think, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but you know, like, from the Christian perspective, it has to come from God, basically. I'm not sure what I would identify as, but I would say it's like the human impulse and the human spirit should remain in charge. The human spirit should remain in charge. And what's so interesting right now is, like, I'm not even sure if that's true right now. Because to me, it feels the platforms are in charge.
Absolutely. I completely
agree. Or the money printer is in charge, you know, like pick your kind of poison. But it's again, like, why had Google had to remove Don't Be Evil? Why? Who was in charge of that?
But I think
but what I'm trying to say is, like, Google itself, Google had to. Google, the entity, had to remove it. It wasn't Sergey or whatever, I think.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Yes, and that is the point. And when you say in charge, you don't mean an authority. You mean some kind of entity.
I made the same joke the last time. It's like, in my household, who is in charge? It's the fucking cats. Because if the cats need to be fed or want to get out, it's like, I have to get up my ass and so on. Or like, if you have a baby, who is in charge? The baby's in charge.
100%.
But you know what I mean? And that's why we are in a symbiotic relationship with technology. And I think right now, technology is parasitic on humanity, especially in the attention economy, especially with the online platforms and this kind of stuff. Same with money. Money is a psychotechnology that enables distributed cognition and coordination on a massive scale. We have to use money to function as a society. Otherwise, it's just like Dunbar's number, 150 people or less clans that fight each other all the time. It's like money ushers in peace, period. And all the Bitcoiners know that our money is so insanely broken. We are in a relationship with money. I wouldn't even call it a symbiotic relationship. It's a completely parasitic relationship. Like, fiat money, the relationship that humanity has with money right now is a relationship with fiat money, and it breaks so many things. It's like insane. And I think with technology, with especially network technology, it's very similar. It's very, very similar. Hmm. Where it's like the all the platforms and all the things and everything that we discuss here all the time, also the app stores and like all this kind of stuff. It's kind of maximizing for the wrong thing. And I'm not even sure if we want to maximize for like anything except for like meaning or human experience.
Yeah,
maximize well-being
at the margins. Maximize. Gigi decides
what. Tell, exactly. I can't tell you what you should maximize for.
Exactly.
That's the thing. Exactly. Let's end it here, man.
I think one last point. But I think
I'm fainting. No, it's continue.
I think Nostr is such a perfect canvas for this.
Yeah.
Because the fact is that within a spectrum of a platform, you can experiment, but you're constrained by what you cannot change. And the distribution of the data, you cannot change. You were still asking API.twitter for the data. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Nostr, you are gathering the data. You're not asking for the data. You are going and getting the data. And it's very different. Yeah. Because you can do so many different things that you cannot do if you cannot just change the API.
It's the switch between active and passive, and it's the switch of being your own man or being a serf.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Shall we get a cough?
Let's do it. Give me a hug. We survived.
We didn't get killed. We survived the bus stop.
let me switch it off right now. Man, I'm done. All right. Okay. Press here. All right.
That was a very weird dialogue.
I didn't even press record here, so that's that's good. I guess. Fantastic. We'll manage one day.